Is the Mirkwood character, is that, what's her name? Is that Lily Evangeline's character?
Yes.
Yes. Lily Evangeline, Kate from Lost, is going to be an elf.
Yes, she is.
Evangeline Lily?
Evangeline Lily. Wow, did I screw that up?
Or were you missing the comma?
I thought there was a comma in there.
Yeah, see, I was. That's, you know what? That's exactly what it was. I was expecting.
Sure,
I was expecting,
Craig.
I was
sure
expecting was. Chris to edit it for me.
Uh-huh. Welcome to Nerd Burger. I'm Mike.
And I'm Craig. What episode number is it? You didn't tell me. Quick.
Oh my God, it's 16.
Okay.
Sweet 16.
Oh, jeez. Super sweet 16.
Oh. Are we going to throw an extravagant party for ourselves?
No, we're not.
Is Daddy going to buy us a Beamer or two?
Well, hold on. Maybe. That'd be awesome. I'd like that. Can we do that?
Sure.
My dad. I'm trying to see my dad looking at the price of a Beamer and going, here you go, son. My 41-year-old son. I'll buy you this because you talk on the internet. No, that's not going to happen.
Holy crap. Those cost how much? I guess, wait, if it's your dad, it's, holy crap, those cost how much?
Holy criminy.
Holy criminy.
Holy criminy.
So how's it going?
It's going fine. Yeah. We do have a guest today, again. This is a special guest, somebody from way out in the wilds of Seattle. And so we're going to bring him on board right now. We've used this theme before, but for somebody else. This time, it's a guy named Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris, are you there?
I am.
Come in, Chris.
Welcome aboard.
But I don't roam the front lawn. So I'm not.
But you're white nerdy.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, we're going to post a photo of you, and everybody's going to get to listen to you. So I think they're probably going to figure it out. Well, we don't have to post a photo of you, but we could.
I am a champion of D&D, though. That's very accurate.
Well, you do it. You're a professional nerd, as it has been stated by about some other people before.
Yeah, professional nerd. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Out in Seattle, huh?
So yes, Seattle, the left coast, yes.
That's right. So
wake up like an hour ago, have your coffee.
That's actually not where I was going with that.
Oh. Okay.
What happened the last time we had a guest from Seattle? We had days and days of torrential rain here.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
And what's it been doing for the last week?
Raining like crazy.
We had like 8 feet of rain here.
I think we officially have to blame you guys.
You can have our rain. We don't get rain during the summer.
I think we do have your rain. It must be what's going on.
Well, most of the country or the world really doesn't realize that the south of the United States actually has a rainy season that gets ridiculous at times. And it's not the just occasional, like, you know, Seattle doesn't get dumped on horribly. It just gets rain every day or every other day for, you know, in smaller amounts for extended periods of time, whereas the South gets these, what they call them, pop-up thunderstorms.
Pop-up popcorn.
Popcorn thunder. Yeah. They just suddenly appear, and it just downpours for
and they don't
like
move.
A half an hour, 40 minutes.
They just stay in
and
one
then they,
place.
And then they disappear.
They rain themselves out.
I'm from Virginia, so I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, the lie that people in Seattle tell other people is that it's raining every other day. It doesn't. In the summer, it's really nice, actually.
Yeah, I've been out there in the summer, couple summers ago, and it was very nice. I mean, just, I don't recall there being rain there at all the time that I visited.
Yeah, so that's
and it,
just to keep
and it doesn't
away.
Get yeah, and it doesn't get super hot because it, you know, it stays relatively cool.
That is why breezy. I live here. That's why I live here. I it's too hot on the East Coast, guys.
Hot and muggy.
Yes, exactly.
It was muggy.
I don't
want
to swim to work.
Although you could if you wanted to over there. Literally swim to work because there's little lakes and things all over the place. You guys are in kind of like the whole Seattle area is just dotted with all sorts of hills and lakes, and it's not a big flat plain like some places like Atlanta.
Yeah, that's true. Plenty of lakes, plenty of water.
So, Chris, what do you do for a living? You're a professional nerd.
I'm a professional nerd, but I guess my title is technical editor, which means I'm a game developer for D&D, I guess. I really do it all. I mean,
what's your business card say?
It says technical developer, I guess.
It says technical editor, but
okay. But it doesn't say I guess at the end of it.
Yeah, it doesn't say I guess.
But
it says comma, I guess.
See, comma,
because he's an editor. Yeah, period. Jeez, always working.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nerd. Thank you.
And I actually I know Chris because we've actually worked together a bit, not like in the same office or anything, but I freelance stuff, and he has. Back when I first started doing a lot of freelancing, I actually was in contact with him a fair bit because his job situation, his job description was a little differently. But nowadays, it's usually I write something, you know, I design, and then he gets it and he does the development pass. And you just did something this week for something that I worked on. So exciting! Yeah,
it's very exciting. You do good work.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
It's nice to get Craig's work because it's a little bit easier to work on than other.
Yeah, because I write in short, two syllable word sentences.
Well, you know, there is arm deep development, and then there's just touching something up, right? I mean, you know, so.
So he's kind of done your work for you.
Yes,
a little. I've made his job easier, and I appreciate that. And
you appreciate making his job easier?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the compliment that I'm doing decent work, and I'm sure he appreciates it
more than you do.
I'm not driving developers insane.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you have to love the fact that you get something and you just read it. You basically touch up a few things and then you send it on. You don't have to like.
A+, gold star. Good job, Craig.
You don't have to take out the engine, send it back to the manufacturer.
I hope I never have a rewrite come back where they say replace the engine.
Rewrite D&D for your adventure.
Right. In D&D terms, that would be, we want you to change the core. The core conceit of this article or adventure or whatever, which basically would entail probably rewriting the entire thing.
Yeah, I mean, they probably just can it then.
Yeah. I've had that happen too. I'm not perfect. I've had stuff that I worked on end up on the shelf. They like to call it putting it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. This shelf. It never comes off the shelf. It's a sticky shelf.
It's a sandwich.
Yeah. I've had stuff, yeah. It didn't quite work. And it went kerplooey. It happens.
Yeah, it's happened to me. I mean, write something for a book or something that doesn't end up in the book.
Mike, do you have anything we want to dive into the real work of the episode, the real meat of the burger?
The patty.
do you guys use that a lot, the meat of the burger?
We've referred to it as the meat of the episode once or twice. I think that's the first time I've called it the meat of the burger. We're trying to get past 20 episodes before we start using all the same shtick.
Before we recycle.
Yeah. I have a couple of news items.
News stinger.
Woo!
Did you just say?
News stinger.
Okay.
That is the technical broadcasting term.
Which we learned from a guest who works in radio.
For that little bit of music. Well, first of all, I'd like to do a shout out to a listener.
Okay.
My friend Josh.
Josh.
Who's listening,
Josh. In Whoop.
Indiana.
Whoop.
That's right.
Okay, go Josh. Why are we?
He's a photographer, actually a photojournalist.
Okay.
So maybe if we're lucky, we can get him on the show.
Oh, to talk photography. To talk nerddom?
Photo nerdiness.
Okay.
But
yeah, Josh, get your act together. Call Mike. Gotta put the onus on them sometimes.
Yeah. But anyway. No, so I just recently discovered that he was listening and came across this story, so I thought I'd bring it up now. But there's I don't know if either of you have heard about what the Chicago Sun-Times did to their photography staff.
Did the Atlanta book get to the wall and shoot them?
Figuratively, yeah. Oh, okay. They fired them all.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, they fired all their photographers, and they said, okay, reporters, you all have cameras on your phones. Take your own pictures.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
they're going to be great. Those pictures are going to be great.
They're horrible, and there's a whole website devoted to it now.
And we'll link to it.
That's right. It's called suntimesdarktimes.tumblr.com. And it's a, you go through here, they've got comparisons for every day of the front page of the Sun Times and the Chicago Tribune. And you get to see the quality of the photos that they're using now as compared to a newspaper that actually has professional photographers.
Professionals, keyword.
Yeah. And it's quite hilarious.
Oh, now they're going to make me go and take the pictures too. Jeez.
Man.
I'm just imagining, well, see, now it's Chicago, so I'm imagining a bunch of 40-something overweight guys wearing sports stuff sitting around a bar complaining that they have to take photos.
A bunch of guys with mustaches.
They all got mustaches.
But,
that's
no,
terrible.
Something I thought of is you got to wonder about all the photographers over at the Tribune. Like, especially the ones that, you know, might not have been performing all that well at their jobs, or,
you know. They're all sweating it now.
Yeah.
Because there's all these photographers that are going to be gunning for their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole newspaper's worth of photographers out there sending in their resumes.
So these guys aren't even, they didn't even say, okay, you're all fired, but we'll consider you for freelance work.
As far as I know, they just canned them.
Well, it's entirely, who wrote the article?
What article?
Who reported this?
It's been reported everywhere.
Okay, so, but the thing is that, you know, because journalists are journalists, they're going to sensationalize it. And so even if there was like, you know, but we'll consider freelancing you, and here's the, you know, what rate you would get for your experience, but all that kind of crap, they might just not bother to say that in the articles to sensationalize it, to make it a bigger story. Because it's a better story to say that these guys got canned. Whoa. It's a better story to say that these guys got canned than to say they got canned, but we're going to kind of give you some freelance work. How you doing there, Rubby? Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. sounded like you might have been lost in a landslide there.
All right.
Sorry.
That's okay. Right.
I forgot that I wasn't supposed to touch my computer.
That's the kind of professional podcasting you get here at Nerdburger.
It gets very exciting.
Guests that can't follow directions.
Yes.
And hosts.
I'm a technical editor. I'm not a professional whatever you guys are.
We're not professional anything. I'm barely a professional architect. what else you got? You said you got stuff. Well, good luck to those photographers.
Yes. And okay, keeping it in the Midwest here, Dateline, Detroit.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's not like they don't have enough problems as it is.
Yeah, no kidding.
First it's Newsdinger, and now it's Dateline.
Yeah.
Clawson, which is somewhere around Detroit.
A suburb.
Sure. Police are shaking their heads after a suspected domestic violence call turned out to be something else entirely.
There better not be a sofa involved.
There is not.
Okay.
Clawson Police Chief Harry Anderson says a woman...
Harry Anderson!
Yeah, I know. I thought about that, too.
Boom, boom.
Says a woman dialed 911 when she heard what sounded like a violent altercation between her neighbors at a Maple Road apartment complex. Quote, one of the neighbors had heard somebody yelling. A female yelling. She was possibly being hit, yelling, stop! No! The concerned party also said that in between shouts, she heard a repeated loud noise. Police arrived within minutes. When they knocked on the door of the unit, Anderson said a woman told officers she was indeed shouting stop, but that her boyfriend was not beating her. So what was the stink all about? Quote, the female that was inside stated that her boyfriend had continued to pass gas, and she was yelling at him to stop, Anderson said.
That's wonderful.
In a show of a little police humor, the officer's report states that police then cleared the scene expeditiously.
God. That's probably the high point of their year. Mm-hmm. Did you see what I wrote there in the police report, eh? Although that's not a Detroit accent. I like to use that accent for everywhere in the Midwest.
That's like Alberta.
Yeah.
You left America.
It's Minnesota,
accent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess it could be Minnesota.
Yeah, so it just made me think, you know, what would life have been like had... Is it over?
Had Chris stopped touching his laptop?
Like, I wasn't touching my computer at that time.
It's like weird. He's eating potato chips.
Now that was me.
No, I was thinking what life would have been like at my parents lived in an apartment.
Oh,
when I grew up,
deal with all the
and we had neighbors that could
wacky neighbors
that could hear my dad farting.
Oh, jeez, yeah. Stop.
Okay, so that's what's new in farts.
Jeez,
and other bodily emissions.
Okay, and now we'll go over to one of Craig's favorite topics is television because I'm a lazy bastard.
I like TV. I watched TV last night.
You didn't watch any today?
I did watch TV today.
Chris, did you watch TV today?
I didn't.
Oh, you've got a life.
Guess what I watched this morning?
What?
Fashion
cartoons?
Police. No. Fashion Police. Why? Because I'm married.
And Mike and his wife are codependent television watchers, I've learned. They watch things together all the time.
You know what?
You guys don't watch much.
No,
on
no,
your own.
Pretty much no, no. But Joan Rivers is pretty funny. I'll give her that.
This is one of those things where they just happen to be sitting next to each other, and the television is on. I think.
No, I think Mike pays attention.
Yeah, no, it's pretty funny.
Okay. Jeez.
I have nothing to say.
There's far too many.
Okay, Craig, what acceptable television do you want to talk about?
Since clearly what I watch
isn't.
Once upon a time, the fairy tale show. But not actually so much that show. I started watching it in the first season. I watched it into the second season a little bit, and then I just kind of fell away.
I was going to say, I thought you had quit that.
There's
one.
Just too much other stuff that I mean. I don't.
But you have.
I only have so much time. To watch.
You have Once Upon a News Item?
No. Well, sort of. What happened is what they've decided to do with Once Upon a Time, and I found this interesting, is that they're spinning a show off of it, which isn't, you know, new in its own, in itself. But what they're doing is, I guess what it's supposed to be called is Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, because Alice's Wonderland exists in the Once Upon a Time universe, because all fairy tales and children's tales like that exist in the Once Upon a Time universe.
Okay.
But what they're doing is they ordered up like 13, I think now they've bumped it to maybe a little higher than that, episodes. And then that's going to be it. They're going to just do one mid-length sort of season rather than, you know, like spinning off a real show that's going to keep going.
So a miniseries.
Kind of. But I, you know, what do you call it? Is it, you know, is a 16 or 18 episode, is that a miniseries?
Well, they're...
I wouldn't call that a miniseries. I mean, that's practically a whole show.
Right. But they're only going to do the one. That's the plan.
Well, American Horror Story technically is a miniseries.
I was thinking about that too. That's 13 each of them. And when they started doing well the first season, they pitched themselves into the arena for awards right. As a miniseries rather than as a TV show. And they won some too, did they not?
I believe so. Yeah. Jessica Lange won.
Right. But I just found it interesting now that they're gonna actually spin off a show and turn it into a one shot, you know, maybe 15 or 16 or 18 episodes. It's not going to be a full 22, and it's going to be bigger than 13.
Well, and it's going to have an ending, right?
Yeah, it's gonna be a complete story.
Well, maybe that's what miniseries means,
right? And then they're just going to take, you know, it's going to beginning, middle, and end, and they'll be done with it. It's not going to be one of those things that they leave you hanging on a bunch of stuff, and then they don't know how long the show is going to run, and who knows, you know, like some TV shows suffer from where they don't know where they're going.
I mean, it's not like we're connected to the internet and we could just look up what the definition of miniseries is.
No, not at all. No.
All of our computing power is built into trying to overcome your beard sounds and making our Skype connection work.
Oh, don't forget our dozens of dollars worth of equipment.
Yes.
Problems.
But I just thought that was kind of interesting that they're suddenly, you know, American Horror Story has done it where each season is different. And I imagine we'll start to see more of that now, too, because it's proving to be an effective way to do it.
I'm fine with it.
Netflix is doing that. Their shows, they're doing, yeah. You know, they're just boom.
That's kind of a pendulum swing away from the Lost model, where if you didn't watch the next episode, you were lost.
Right.
It wasn't just the name of the show. It was also a warning.
Where you would be if you missed an episode.
It was a meta metaphor.
Ooh. Oh, hey.
That's a guy who works with words for a living.
I made that up.
Just now. Okay, well, that's that. I just, you know, it was one of those little tidbitty things. I was like, wow, is this going to turn into a thing? We'll see.
I hope so. I would rather actually consume entertainment that way than be strung along forever.
Just to know that there's going to be an ending, that this is what they're planning. It's like, even if they plan it from the outset and said, we're going to do this, it's if it gets, you know, if we make it past the first 13 episodes, we're going to call it, it's going to be 3 seasons. And that's it. We're going to tell the whole story in that time.
That's about the length of time a show is good anyway.
There have been shows that have been like that. Like, you know, Babylon 5 was kind of meant to be a certain length of time. It got extended by a season because the studio waved a bunch of money in front of people's faces. And I guess the last season isn't very good. But that was
Battlestar Galactica like that?
Battlestar Galactica, geez, I'm not sure how that worked out.
Was that intended to end at a certain point?
Well, it wasn't. They planned to end it, but, you know, sci-fi could have just screwed them and, like, suddenly just canceled the show. But they did. It was one of those things where when they went into the fourth season, they knew that that was going to be the final season, and they knew they were getting a full order. So they had the entire season to play it out, if I remember correctly. So, but I think, especially with genre shows, that networks are starting to get the clue that the fan base is going to get really peeved if they pull a Firefly again, where they where they just up and cancel a show. You know, it's like, well, you know, give them a chance to just wrap up a storyline or something. Even if you're going to cancel the show, like, they had a major storyline in that show. They could have just said, okay, we'll call this the ending and we'll wrap that up. They kind of did that with Dollhouse. They gave them a chance to wrap that up.
They did it with Fringe.
Yeah. Fringe. Chuck knew they had one final short season to wrap it up. I think they're starting to do that more and more. So that's good. Bad, you know, Breaking Bad's getting that treatment. Mad Men, next season of Mad Men is the last one. Because they're going to be out of the 60s.
they ran out of 60s, did they?
Sorry, we ran out of 60s. Show has to end.
Well, it's just how it's how it's happened to turn out. They're in 68 right now, and the announcement has been made that next season is the final season. So, anyway, we'll roll out of that. Chris, you wanted to talk a little bit about video games because you're a dork, right?
Yeah, because I prefer not to sleep, I guess.
You stay up all night playing...
Yeah,
kind video of. Games. What a great dad you must be.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I spend time with my family, and then
you play video games
instead of sleeping. Maybe.
Okay.
Allegedly.
There it is again,
and stealing Mike's bit.
But he hasn't listened to the show.
I know. That's one of Mike's favorite words.
I'm psychic.
Allegedly, yes. So, what have you been playing lately, or what are you digging on right now?
Well, right now I'm playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, but I'm actually right this second.
Wow,
yeah,
is that what those noises are?
Sorry.
last week our Skype guest was shopping online while we were recording. So,
well, it turns out I'm probably about 3 years behind the video game curve, which is good in some ways because you get the video games cheaper, but or you get the ultimate editions or whatever. But still, I also was told by my friend Richard Dansky, I don't know if you know who he is, but that most people don't finish video games, and I always do. So I can play a video game for a long time.
Yeah, I think our friend Josh has made the comment that he runs into that problem because he's really into video games. So he'll start playing one, he'll get partway through it, and then the next thing will come.
Yeah, and I just ignore it. I might acquire it. I might acquire it, but I don't. I play until I'm done.
Wow. Stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah. I mean, like, I kind of got, by accident, got all the achievements in the first Fallout 3, so.
Now, what platform do you play on?
I just play on the Xbox 360.
Okay. Is that what you have, Craig?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll probably move to PC because I'm going to try to dabble in modding with Skyrim or the GEC for Fallout. But right now it's just Xbox 360. Plus, I'm interested in other people's modifications for those types of games.
That's become quite the thing lately, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, some people make things that are better than what's in the game itself, insofar as like Skyrim has an add-on that's for building your own houses, and some of the add-ons that provide you with houses are much better. So,
so why aren't these people getting hired?
Some of them do. That's the thing.
That's cool.
And I think that that's right too. I mean,
absolutely. If the guy out there for, you know, is making something really awesome for free, why wouldn't you snap him up and pay him some money to make your game cool?
Yeah. You want good designers, and good designers are on display in the modding, community. So I just finished Fallout 3 New Vegas, which was a pretty cool game too. Before I started playing Assassin's Creed.
Did you get all of the achievements as well?
Yes.
Jeez. Now, do you just happen to
most
get
them by accident?
I was going to say, you get them luckily, or do you get to the end and you're like, nah, I'm going to go back and find all the other little things?
Well, I get to the end and I have like two or three left, and I go, well, I might as well figure out how to do those too. So I just do.
Now, I imagine that there are places on the internet, forums and whatnot, where you can go
find the full list.
Yeah. Where somebody's posted. Do you bother to check that out, or do you enjoy discovering it?
Well, for some games like Fallout 3 New Vegas, the list is there in the game. So it's a complete list in the game. It doesn't say, Dragon Age 2 said this, something like, you have to discover this achievement or something. I'm like, okay, I might never discover it.
And then you're going to be like, oh, well, then you won't know that you missed anything, and who cares? And
right, exactly. So I mean, but I don't play for achievements. It's just, I just play through all of the content. I just want to see all the content.
So you're just that good.
I don't know if it's good. It's something, but I don't know if it's good. Yeah. I'm just interested in the content. I'm interested in the content. So, and seeing what the developers and the designers had in mind. So,
surprise, surprise, a guy who works for a role-playing game that builds worlds filled with characters and adventures and quests and items and traps and monsters and everything else likes to run around and explore other people's worlds.
Yes, I do.
Surprise.
It's true. No big surprise.
Cough switch.
We don't have one of those. There's a mute button over on the mixer there, but it's across the table.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a cough switch?
Sure. Mm-hmm. In big, well-outfitted studios, every mic station will have a cough switch in front of them. The person can press the button if they need to cough while they're right in front of the microphone. It'll mute them.
That's nice.
Not that we have that, because that costs more than dozens of dollars.
Well, we do.
Oh, that's not... Go. Smartass. Anyway,
I just don't know when you're going to cough.
Yeah.
You know, my reflexes aren't that good.
Sometimes it just happens. Welcome to Nerdburger, coughing with Craig. Okay. How about we talk about books and movies and TV and comic books and moving from one to the other?
Okay.
Chris, this was something you wanted.
Did you say books in movies?
Books and
TV? And movies and TV.
Yes, he said news dinger. He said news.
No,
dinger.
No. It's news stinger.
News dinger? News dinger?
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
I'm missing my sound effects over here today.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. So, Chris, you wanted to talk about changes in media between books and movies and television and so forth, and what happens when you take a book and make it into a movie, or take a movie and make it into a TV show or whatever. And why don't you dive in with whatever you might want to say, because I know you're itching to say something.
Well, I mean, the basic philosophy is that changing media results in changing some aspect of the presentation or the content. You can't change media without changing content to some extent.
Right.
Like the Hobbit movie, the original story of the Hobbit is told from Bilbo's perspective, and he didn't have an omniscient perspective.
Right. He didn't run around and see Radagast.
Right.
Running around doing his thing.
He didn't know why the dwarves and the elves didn't get along.
The crazy wizard. The crazy wizard with the bunny.
Right. Oh,
with the bunny wagon, with the bunny sled.
With the bird poop in his hair, yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah.
And not only that, the spirit of the Hobbit was a lot different from the Lord of the Rings. A lot of people who are Lord of the Rings fans kind of have the same level of reverence for The Hobbit. And The Hobbit is a different tone. It's a totally different tone.
It's a children's book.
Right, essentially. And I think that, for example, the movie The Hobbit in some ways kind of cartoonishly captured that spirit. in ways that people who take the Lord of the Rings very seriously didn't like, you know.
Like the dwarves and their little song and flinging.
Well, that's in the book. I mean, you can't argue with
that. Right, it's in the book. But the thing about it is that in the movie, and they translated it, and for the people who have read the book and they have that nostalgic value, even if they're not children anymore, that's like, oh, yeah, that's from the book. But me, I didn't read the book when I was a little kid. In fact, I haven't read the book at all. I know. Bad nerd.
But I haven't read any of them.
I watched The Hobbit, and I was kind of like, I found that scene ridiculous. I was like, what the hell? Because I don't have that, you know, I didn't go into it with, like, you know, it's a children's story mentality.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of ridiculous things, in my opinion, in the movie. But that's because they go on too long, or they just take it way over the top. But I thought the basic spirit of it, though, was right. And one of the things that got me thinking about this aspect of translation in media and trying to translate, especially such a huge story, into a movie, is that people were making a big deal over the fact that they have cast a female character as the leader of the elven guardians in Mirkwood.
Okay. Because all those books are kind of lacking in female characters.
Well, they're certainly lacking in some respects, but the thing is, to me, and this is important to D&D adventure building too, this character, Tauriel, exists in one of the gaps that Tolkien left. So in a lot of adventures or campaign, or if you're going to talk about D&D campaign settings, there are gaps in the information that's there. And I think that somebody who comes along and wants to tell a story and fill in that gap, what's the problem?
Right. You know? It's perfectly valid. You know, right. they've got the rights to adapt it. They're going to, I mean, Peter Jackson has changed other stuff, and that admittedly people, you know, a lot of hardcore Tolkien fans hit the fan over it. They got
including his family. Well,
yeah. And some of those things didn't exist in the gap.
Right, but if it's something that's a gap, then, you know, shut up at all. I mean, just shut up already. Who cares if, you know, the character's going to be male or female? 50-50 chance, basically. Well, what's wrong with it being a female?
And I think another thing that Jackson is probably doing with the Hobbit movies is he's explaining how things lead up to the actual end of the Hobbit, which is a war between the elves, the dwarves, orcs, and some other factions. Somebody who's never read the books, you can't just say, oh, well, and you should just understand that the elves feel this way, or, you know, you have to tell that story.
Right. And because now here we are talking about the translation from one media to another in a book, you can do that with just narrative text. The writer can tell you the elves feel like this. Mm-hmm.
You can do it like it was done in The Hobbit, and Bilbo didn't know what was going on, so it's not there. It's just not there. Bilbo's the point of view character. He doesn't understand the politics. He just knows what he observes.
Right.
So he just knows that one day the elves show up and do this.
But in a movie, it's easier to show what needs to be shown. Movies are visual.
Right.
So if you want to fill that gap in, I mean, there's something to be said. Now, are you saying that there's... In the movies, because it sounds like you know kind of what's coming with some of the next two movies, they're going to actually fill in some of those gaps visually. You're going to see these things happen so that we can understand what's going on, even if Bilbo is not seeing them.
Right.
So that we as an audience know what's going on. We will know more than Bilbo.
So, yeah, right. So in the movie, Bilbo is a main character, but he is not the point of view character. So that's the difference.
Right. It's an omniscient point of view.
Yeah.
In the movie. We're seeing all over the place.
Right.
Is that is the Mirkwood character? Is that what's her name?
Warning! Craig screws up names. Warning!
That Lily Evangeline's character?
Yes.
Lily Evangeline Kate from Lost is going to be an elf.
Yes, she is.
Evangeline Lilly.
Wow, did I screw that up?
Or were you missing the comma?
I thought there was a comma in there.
Yeah, see, I was. That's, you know what? That's exactly what it was. I was expecting.
Sure,
I was expecting,
Craig.
I was
sure
expecting was. Chris to edit it for me. Uh-huh. Yes, Evangeline. Well, Lily's a first name too.
Yeah, it is.
I don't feel bad. I'm sure you're Evangeline. I'm sure you're a wonderful elf.
Yeah, she looks pretty cool in the costumes that
I saw a photo of her. She looked, you know, she looked elfy. She looked good.
So,
and she hasn't been around for a while, so she's managed to distance herself from Lost a little bit so she can pop back up again. Haven't seen her in too much stuff.
Yeah. And I didn't see her in much Lost because I could only be led by the nose for so long.
Oh, you gave up on Lost, huh?
Well, at the end of the first season, my wife and I look at each other and go, you know what? I feel like I got fish hooks in each nostril.
Wow.
So we're going to leave that alone. Now we can watch it and watch it all the way to the end.
Sure. Binge.
We can binge it if we want to.
From somebody
at our leisure.
From somebody who has watched the whole all of Lost, go ahead and just skip the second season.
Ooh, ouch.
There's not a heck of a lot in there that you really need to give a crap about. Just trying to think of like other instances. Have you
Well, like people were up in arms about the fact that the orc villain in The Hobbit is called Azog in the movie.
Right.
And the actual name in the book is Bolg, who is Azog's son because Azog was killed. It's this type of thing that you wouldn't know unless you were really steeped in the history of the...
Right, so then all the Tolkien nerds came out of the woodwork. Well, you know, that's not the correct name. Actually, what happened was...
No, you gotta do. You gotta do comic book guy.
You know, worst orc ever.
There you go.
But this is like D&D too. Sometimes as a DM, you're reading something and you see two names. And you say, that name is cooler. Azog is cooler than Bolg.
Sure.
So
that's a better name. Absolutely.
It's a better name. So, yeah.
Well, they've done stuff with Game of Thrones where they've combined characters and they've changed characters' names because there were characters' names that were too similar sounding when you said them out loud.
Well,
that's
actually a problem in the books, too. You're reading the book and you're like, wait a minute, is he talking about this guy?
Right.
Oh, no. It's just the same name.
No, I had that problem with Arwen and Eowyn.
Right. Well, in Game of Thrones, there's
which chick that's into the king is that?
there's a character named...
Warning. Craig screws up even more names. Warning.
There's a character named Osha and a character named Asha.
Right.
And they changed Asha to something else.
Occupational safety.
Yeah, OSHA. Exactly. Occupational Safety Hazard Administration. You have to check in with that prostitute to make sure that your scaffolding is up to spec. You know, Peter Dinklage's prostitute, OSHA.
Is that another news dinger?
No. <Jeez.
laughs> Is that our title?
Stinger. Might be.
Stinger. Come on.
Watchmen. You had all the nerds coming out of the woodwork on Watchmen when they changed a major plot point. Well, they changed, like, kind of the ending. How the ending comes about, anyway.
Speaking of giant blue dingers.
Maybe somebody is going to, you know, threaten my life for this, but I think that the flow of the movie, The Watchmen, was actually much better than the comic book version. So, you know, sometimes that's what happens when you give somebody some time to take the story and craft it a little bit more.
Right. And it would have made no sense. And this is, we'll throw this out here really quickly. Now that we've spoiled other things.
Spoilers.
In Watchmen, the comic, the destruction of New York and all the killing that takes place there comes from, what is it? Like a giant psychic, like an enormous psychic squid monster.
Basically.
Yeah. It's a big monster from somewhere off in space or something that's been, was it from somewhere or did, what's his name? Adrian, did he genetically create it?
I think Ozymandias created it.
Adrian Biter. Yeah, Ozymandias. Yeah. He creates the thing, and then he drops it into New York, and it goes, and blows up everybody's brains.
Right.
And they don't establish in the movie that he is genetically manipulating all sorts of things. That's right. Part of his you know, smartest man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's running around, you know, genetically, although you do see the weird cat thing with the stripes and everything, his little pet at the end, which he has genetically created.
Right.
But instead, they give it a different tweak, and they had New York get leveled in a different way that made more sense to the story. But there were all the people, all the, you know, hardcore Watchmen lovers who fell in love with the series when it came out were like, that's just sacrilege. Where's the squid? Well, to the average moviegoer who doesn't, who hasn't read this, the comic, and doesn't know all this other stuff, the squid makes no sense. Like, let's say you're watching The Watchmen and you have no idea, and he's like, oh, and there's all these guys in superpowers, and oh, Rorschach's really cool. He kicks ass all over the place, and he gets, they blew him up. And where the fuck did that squid come from? Why is everybody in New York dying from looking at it?
Yeah,
no, they had to do something different, because didn't make sense. It was too comic booky.
Yeah, and what they chose to do differently actually amplified the relationships that they wanted to make.
Right, important. And it made Dr. Manhattan's relationship into the whole thing at the end much more important. It made you know, how the world views him very differently, because they believe it was him.
Yeah, and it's that kind of is more important. Dr. Manhattan is this kind of aloof, enlightened figure, even in the comic book, and what he ends up choosing to do, just it does kind of play along with that aloof, enlightened, kind of totally detached thing that he has going on, but it's not particularly satisfying. I mean,
right. And the thing about it is that, you know, the comic can discuss that kind of thing, but that's a character that's hard to, for the moviegoer, for the typical moviegoer, to really latch onto and understand it all. So they make it, instead of, it's not so much that you're feeling for him, you're feeling for the people who are now fearing him.
Right.
You're in their seats. You're in bed with the rest of the population of the world going, oh my God, what's this guy going to do next?
Right.
And that gives the emotional attachment for the viewer.
And it's also easier to, it actually ends the story in a way that's easier to understand when you aren't given as much information as can be conveyed in written medium.
As opposed to a movie, which, you know, finite. Right. Unless you want to just start slapping voiceovers over everything and just ruin your movie, because 95% of movies with voiceovers suck, or at least the voiceovers are bad.
You want to have seven endings to your movies. Oh, great. It's now I can go pee.
Like The Lord of the Rings. Oh, came all the way back around on that.
You know, maybe you should have just let them die in the lava.
As my friend Eric said, the movie just kept on ending and ending and ending. But I still watch it. I still like it. So
yeah, I think they're great movies. It's too bad that Fellowship is the best of them. But you know.
Did I quick aside story on watching Fellowship? Went to see it in the movie. Got done. Me and my buddy Eric and a couple other people come walking out. We're right behind two women, and they are pitching a fit. They didn't even get to the volcano. This movie has no ending.
Didn't even get to the volcano.
Right. I'm thinking the person who lives under a rock knows that this is the beginning of a trilogy. They have advertised the crap out of this, that this is going to be three movies, and these two women apparently didn't know. They were just, it was fun to watch them.
Oh, my God. I can't believe they didn't even get to the volcano.
This movie was terrible. All right. So I thought we'd do a little bit of learning. Today, it's Learning with Craig. We're going to talk about history. Everybody likes history, right? That was your favorite class in high school. hold it.
I was just going to say, that was my favorite class.
Chris, wake up. Wake up. Wake up, honey. It's time for school.
5 more minutes.
No. But this will be fun stories. Here we go. In 1838, Edgar Allan Poe's only novel was published, The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Plym of Nantucket. Partway through the book, the crew of a ship called the Grampus finds themselves with a busted boat and no food or water. They manage to catch a tortoise and strip off its shell, but eventually, in order to survive, the crew draws straws to figure out which of them will be sacrificed to provide meat for everyone else. The death straw goes to a former mutineer named Richard Parker, who is promptly stabbed to death, his head, hands, and feet thrown overboard. Yeah. This keeps the This keeps the floating Donner Party alive a little bit longer, and the two remaining crew members are still are on the brink of death, but are finally rescued. A creative story. Poe actually called this his own story very silly, but here comes the twist. In 1884, a yacht named the Mignotte left England, headed towards Sydney, Australia. The yacht wasn't really made for trips around the world, so it shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone that it sank in a storm. The four-man crew barely escaped in a lifeboat, but they definitely didn't have enough provisions for survival. They did catch a turtle and eat it, but just like their counterparts in the 45-year-old Poe story, they needed more if they were going to survive. One man, a 17-year-old named Richard Parker, fell overboard. And then made the mistake of drinking seawater to attempt to quench his thirst. Parker started going downhill fast, and that's when his fellow survivors decided they would kill him to ensure their own survival. The men had considered drawing straws, but they figured Parker was so far gone that they might as well kill him and drink his blood while it was fresh instead of risking the contaminated blood that might come if they waited for him to die. After stabbing Parker in the throat with a penknife, the three men devoured him, and they were rescued a few days later.
Wow. Prescient.
Edgar Allan Poe, for even, you know, one
Edgar Allan Poe is from my hometown.
Oh, yeah.
Richmond, Virginia.
Do you know him?
Well,
you ever meet him?
No. A little young.
Okay. But, yeah, it wasn't just like any writer. It was Edgar Allan Poe, writer of kind of creepy stories. Actually happened. Richard That's Parker. Pretty stunning. Do you know a Richard Parker? I don't know any.
No, I don't know any.
Okay, so
anymore.
You'll have to, whoa.
If you do know a Richard Parker, them's good eats.
Richard Parker, if you're listening to the podcast, we promise that we won't kill you and eat you.
But just keep in mind that you're delicious.
With a name like Richard Parker, it has to be good. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Okay, another story?
Sure.
Okay, this one's about Napoleon. Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, okay.
Not dynamite. I saw your face.
Yeah. I was about to say that.
Napoleon Bonaparte faced his greatest defeat not at the hands of the Duke of Wellington's army at Waterloo, but at the hands of bunny rabbits. Mike's eyes grow wide. It was a fine summer in 1807. Napoleon was high in spirits, having signed the Peace of Tilsit. And to celebrate, Napoleon suggested that the imperial court should enjoy a lavish rabbit hunt organized by his trusted chief of staff, Alexander Berthier, because I'm American. Berthier was so keen to impress that he had bought hundreds of rabbits to ensure that the imperial court had plenty to shoot at. Satisfied that nothing could possibly go wrong, Berthier waited calmly for the guests to take their positions. The shoot commenced and the rabbits were released. But disaster struck. Instead of scattering in all directions, the horde of rabbits suddenly turned and charged at Napoleon. Confronted by the flood of rabbits, the emperor's escort formed a skirmish line to protect him. But in what the words of historian David Chandler, with a finer understanding of Napoleonic strategy than most of his generals, the rabbit horde divided into two wings and poured around the flanks of the party. As the emperor fled to the relative safety of his coach, the rabbits pursued, some allegedly even leaping into it, so that he had to lend a hand in ejecting them, even as his coachman whipped up the horses. In the aftermath, it transpired that Berthier, despite all his attention to detail, had procured not wild rabbits, but domesticated ones. Thus, when they spied the emperor and his coach coming towards them, they thought it was their keeper bringing them food. And acted accordingly.
I was going to say, what did he rub himself with carrots?
Napoleon's pockets were filled with carrots. Oh, bunny rabbits.
Napoleon was actually, it's a little known fact that Napoleon's actual last name was Parker.
It was Parker. It was his maiden name.
It was his maiden name, exactly.
Before he married the Bonapartes. What a great last name, though, anyway.
Bonaparte.
Yeah.
No, that's not a great last name.
It's okay. He was, and he wasn't nearly as short as people think he was either. Relative, he was tall for his age, for his era. He was just short for what we know people, you know, for heights really now. Off the top of my head, I don't know. And it's not as though I have a, you know, magic box that I can just type words into and see if I can find out how tall he was. He was 5 foot seven.
He was 5 foot seven. That's not too bad.
Which was, yeah, which was, you know, not considerably tall, but, you know, tall-ish for the time for a man. That's only, I mean, that's what, 2 inches, inch or 2 inches shorter than average man now.
Yeah.
Average guy now is like 5 foot eight, right?
Yeah.
Something like that, 5'8", 5'9".
Isn't the average increasing as our children consume more and more growth hormone?
Well, as everything food. As everything goes into that, as we don't need to be close to the less and less we need to be close to the ground in order to hide from our enemies and sniff out food and enemies, the taller we get.
Our sense of smell.
I watched an evolutionary thing. That was one of the reasons. That's when things get really tall. That's one of, you know, they do that because they're getting further and further away from the need to do certain things that you need to be right on the ground for. Now, I don't know how that works into giraffes because giraffes still get their asses handed to them by predators, but
they do.
Well, once in a while, I imagine. I don't think the giraffes are the king of the jungle, are they?
No, I mean, not unless it's a height contest.
Well, there you go.
Maybe they are. That's the secret.
They're the power behind the throne. Here, real quick one. In 1504, a German imperial knight lost his hand to a cannon shot, which forced his sword arm against him. Forced his sword against him, took his hand off. He lived. Pretty amazing for the time, and instead of stopping fighting and living the rest of his life in peace, he had an iron hand forged.
Wow.
Let me repeat this. He had an iron hand made 500 years ago. He continued fighting for 40 years, after which he retired to his castle of Hornburg, also an awesome name, for his final years. His name was Götz of the Iron Hand, and the hand is still on display. We'll have a link for that,
too. It didn't rust?
Apparently not. Well, I imagine it did a little bit, maybe. Get some navel jelly on there, clean that off. They didn't invent stainless steel really quickly.
Hey, he just took care of his stuff, man.
Yeah, there you go. He was an imperial knight. He just had his retainers take care of it. Oil that hand up. Sorry. Yeah.
So that's how he polished it.
Oh, okay, so we're going to wrap her up today.
Yep.
Chris, thank you. Yes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting.
Maybe we'll have you on down the road again a little bit.
Just don't bring the rain.
Yeah.
Next time.
Is it raining?
We actually got lucky and it stopped like right during the time we're recording here, but it was raining most of the day.
But we haven't seen the sun in like 5 days.
It's been kind of gloomy. So, Mike, where can they find us?
NerdBurgerShow.com, at NerdBurgerShow on Twitter. There's a crazy dog running through the room. Oh, hi, honey.
Inadvertently on the radio or on the podcast.
Well, that's the last time we leave that door open. Okay, where? NerdBurgerShow on Facebook. And please email us at NerdBurgerShow@gmail.com.
@gmail.com.
That's what I said.
And give us a review on iTunes if you feel like it, please.
Five stars.
Five stars, please. Bye-bye.
Hey, and if you want something new for your history thing, look up William Marshall, First Earl of Pembroke.
William Marshall, First Earl of Pembroke.
Yeah, he was almost launched out of a catapult when he was a kid.
Almost.
All right. So,
well, almost, obviously, because he lived to be in his 70s and he's still fighting, you know.
Okay. Nerdburger audience, there's your homework. Get to it. All right. On the next episode of Nerd Burger, Craig will enunciate better so the guest will not make fun of him for how he slurs through words. Is that better?
Clear as mud.
Newsdinger.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that's it. Whoop. What are you doing? That's some hot forearm you got going on there. Ooh, remember what we were talking about, the Patton Oswalt bit? Yeah, there's a sexy forearms magazine somewhere.
Sure.
So are we going to continue with news stories?
Do you have anything else, Mike?
I'm done.
Okay.
What is News Stinger?
News Stinger? That's just the name. That's what the industry term is for those like little intro music bits. It's a stinger. And that happens to be the News Stinger.
It sounds like News Dinger.
You know, I drank half a pot of coffee this morning and I got nothing.
That's not good. Are you developing some superhuman immunity to caffeine?
No, I'm the opposite. If I drink too much, I get all like... Oh, well... I get like that for about 5 minutes, and then I get sick.
Do I ever get to come over and watch the Beavis show with Mike?
I am Mike Holyo.
Are you threatening me?
Craig goofs up names.